All right, I think we're all here, so we'll kick off the retreat.
All right, well, thank you for all being here, and another year gone by. So we have, I have a small section, I'll do updates and some initiatives, and I'm gonna come back to another point during the presentation. You'll get some more updates from staff on new initiatives, and then, as you see on the agenda, we have the open discussion part. Anytime throughout, interactive as we can make this, I think the better. So, feel free to ask questions and stop us, and we'll take it from there. So again, just to recap, we did break ground, and so dirt has been moved on the firing range. So that is, we finally got that one off the ground, and the GMP is coming to you all at the board meeting. We just did an early site plan so we can get this one moving. So they started moving dirt. Just to kind of loop back, last year we started that CDL program, and I thought we need to report back to you all on how we were doing. So, in a year, we produced 114 CDL trained drivers.
Do you know how many of them went and got jobs in their field?
I don't know. Do we have that?
No.
No, they're not tracking that, but we will. This came up in our conversation, so we're gonna try to find that out. Now, some of them come sponsored, I think. So they're with a company helping pay for it, that kind of thing. But we'll get that. We asked the same question. But and in the conversation with the chancellor, she said we're like one of the highest producing out of all these programs that did this partnership. So they seem to be pleased with our numbers. But
and it's ongoing.
We're keeping it going. So I mean, it's great because it's been such a shortage, and just in our area here alone, we just got 114 people, and I know the bowlers were real excited about.
How about PNS?
Having this. I've not heard about PNS, but again, they might have some people coming, not sure. So we're again, it's great that we're able to do this. You've probably seen the press releases on this, 12th straight year. Top in the country, and had some notes with that. So, yeah, we moved to 28 from 35 last year, and then they have two other categories, and we are number 18 in the country for best online bachelor's programs for veterans, and then we're 124th in the country for best online bachelor's degree in business, and that's up from 141. And the veterans one, we moved up from 20 to 18. So, some good, really good progress there. last year, this was the funding that we had, received, all got signed off, and you're gonna hear more about some of these projects and where we are with them. So it's quite a full plate of projects. And then, the nice part was last year, the very bottom, we were able to get that operational support money to help us do some extra things internally. This year, pending the governor's signature, most PICO funds across the state got 50% this year. For some reason, they were not as generous on the PICO side out of the gate, but we started, that's a good sign. So the remodel project for the Deland campus, we got 3.3. The airframe and power plant project, we got half of that at 6.1. And that is, again, that's a project we changed it to the Daytona area. And that's, as we talked a little bit, partnership we're looking at doing with Embry-Riddle there. So we're excited. And we will, and I got it clarified, we can start the planning process. So we're gonna kick off the RFP here shortly to secure an architect, and then we'll start working with all the stakeholders to start designing, with the goal being that by next September, because we can't start the construction until the funds arrive, even though if we get the second half during session, it usually doesn't arrive till August or September, but the goal is to be shovel ready So when the money comes, so we could be breaking ground next September, and we don't think it'd be more than about an 8-month build, so we'd be ready for the next academic year. So I think we're in good shape there. We did get 100% of the generator replacement ask. Got 100% for the auto service technology program improvements and firefighting equipment we did as well, and also the emergency services critical equipment. That's to help us with finishing off that whole, we'll have to add it all up, how much we have been able to acquire to, you know, move our law enforcement and emergency services from the ATC. And we're gonna, this is creating really, I think, a state-of-the-art emergency services center that will attract law enforcement everywhere to participate, you know, in this. So we've kind of been flying on the radar with this, but this is pretty big when you see what we've now will have created on the DeLand campus. So pretty exciting. And that will buy, you know, we got 1.5 to 1.8, but that's to buy, things like vehicles for the driving pad that they'll have to, you know, skid out in and, you know, drive in water and all that kind of stuff that they get to do and not get in trouble for. Andy.
What you look at me? I don't know what that was. Yeah, that wasn't very nice.
Just a shout out to our resource development. You know, sometimes they go a little under the radar, but you know, they're currently managing 31 active grants for a total of 8.2 million, and we have 6 pending for possible additional 9.1 million in grants. So the grant world has been pretty robust, and we've been able to take some really good advantage of those opportunities, which lets us do a lot of the extra things outside of our budget. So update on esports. This time last year is when we talked about it, and it's been implemented. We hired the coach. 19 students are competing. This was the first fall we could, or spring we could compete, and what's pretty exciting. So right out of the gate, this might not mean something. Read up a little bit on this, but our Super Smash Bros. I guess that's the old Mario Brothers back in the old days, has made it to the national championship, which will be next week. We are the number one. It's a David Kroll, an individual. He's the number one seed in the East, on the East Coast. He went 14-0 on the season, and the match is going to be best out of five, and we won every series, including regular season and playoffs, 3-0. Our Overwatch team is still active. They're in the playoffs as well. They play tonight at 6, and they finished regular season at 4th place in the East, and they are 6-1. And even Rocket League, we made the playoffs, but we lost to the number 2 seed. So pretty good. And again, you know, good numbers in participating. The 19 are in the collegiate program, and then we have 30 students actively participating in the club sport.
It's a long way from Pong, by the way, Tom.
From what?
Pong?
Yeah. I remember Pong. So it's pretty cool. And that's a picture of the room that used to be a classroom in the student center that we jazzed up for the, so now it's the eSport competition room. Flag football, got the green light last year, and just an update, we hired the coach, Brian Cullum. I'm not sure I'm pronouncing that right, but Brian is a local person here who coached at Mainland High School, very active in the flag football area. We did this more as a professional contract, so it's not a full-time position here. His full-time job is a financial planner, but his daughter actually was the quarterback at Mainland, and I think they won the state championship or something. So she's here, gonna play, gonna compete. So it will start in the fall, they'll arrive in August, and they've already signed 11 students, and the roster goal is 18. So again, it brings 18, you know, the things about these sports, you have to be full-time students because a lot of our students are part-time. This brings that full-time FTE into the mix. which is nice. So he's got 11, and he says he'll easily hit 18. He's got more interest than he knows what to do with, so he's just picking and choosing. And we're talking national championship year one, so we're hoping.
We'll have to go to a game.
Yeah. And then as with the stadium and party, some of you were part of that. And when we built it, we did it a little bit better than just the basic, so it could be a destination place where we host national championship, district playoff games, regionals. So we want the community to know about it. So we hosted Mainland High School and DeLand High School in a game, a JV and varsity game this past February. Get them on campus, and so it was pretty. I went to the game, and it was pretty exciting, and they had a good crowd, and it's a great venue for them to play on. And just athletics, just an overview. I thought this was pretty neat. We had four, five of our teams make national appearances over the past year out of 10. So that's pretty good. And we'll have 12 teams next year with esports and. If you count esports, actually, I didn't think about that because they are in the national tournament right now. So it's really five teams out of 11 because they are active this year. I saw that, yeah.
Is the esports national also remote? I mean, is it played in your own venue or do they get people together?
No, I don't. Amy, do you know that the national is being played just like you just compete remotely, or do they actually go to a location?
As far as I know, it's remote.
But they do host like tournaments where people come in, and we've talked about maybe hosting one here using the event center where we can convert the whole event center into this arena the event center is designed, it's got large pull down screens all around. It'd be a pretty cool thing to do, but yeah, maybe you can text Will, see if he knows if they go anywhere to compete. I think it's all been remote. Where we're competing in this room against others. But I do know that they do host these tournaments where they bring people together. And it's funny, these poor people, they want to get together. They as much as they do things remotely, they do like that little social aspect of doing these kind of tournaments. So anyway, some good stuff there in the student life of the equation. So some initiatives that we've had some conversation on and need a little bit of direction from the board is UCF has received $20 million towards a $60 million building that they'd like to put on our campus. And we are in the early stages of working with them to program what is going in the building. Some of the things that we have discussed that we want to make sure, if we're going to be partners, that we are partners. And we thought we would like to have a presence in the building of some sort. And they seem to be amenable to that. The one thought is we have the Center for Business and Industry where we think this might be a good building to put that in, where we do the CEO exchange and all kinds of small business development things that we might relocate to be in that building. It might be a good partnership opportunity there. What they've already done, if you're not aware, I'm not sure if I've shared, is that they've already launched an MBA program here in Daytona, and they're going to do it with a risk management concentration. And we're working with them to help them fill it, trying to get our students in front of them to talk about the program and things like that. And then one of the things they want to put in this building for sure is a risk management program. Now, some talk that they'll develop a master's in risk management, a standalone. I don't know if they're 100% sure about that, but also a bachelor's degree. And we've been talking through it, and I think they realize it's going to be difficult to just bring a freshman here on campus into risk management. And so I think the conversation has evolved somewhat to, how can we partner with them to do 2 years and transfer into an upper division program here, and then also something on their campus. So when you're recruiting an 18-year-old to come to UCF, and come to our bachelor's degree in business, and then within that you start exposing them to risk management. And then they might have like a 3-1. So you do 3 years at UCF in Orlando, you're at the tailgates, you're at the party, you join a fraternity, a sorority, and then your last year, you come to Daytona, and you do your last year with a paid internship at, apparently, the Brown & Brown Foundation Risk Partners and...
For Security.
Security First. Yeah. And what's the other one? The building's named after the one that you're in.
Assured Partners.
Assured Partners. I think they've been all, they kind of, have like an advisory board, and I think they're all getting to, to this, arrangement where they're going to commit to these paid internships. So
they pay for those for the if we had the 2-2 here, that would be a big attraction, I think.
Yes, yeah, and I think the
then
same.
Then they could start the internship even earlier.
It would be the same. I think our students might have the 2-2 where they do 2 years and internships could start earlier. It's trying to figure out how do you create something that is going to meet their goals into attracting students into it.
Well, we've talked about this a lot.
Yeah.
probably from the first day being on the board and talking about what is the role of the state college in that process. Right now, Florida State University has a risk management insurance program that's ranked consistently in the top 5 in the country. It's the only one in the top 5 in the state of Florida. State of Florida is one of the highest utilization states for insurance products, both in the admitted and in excess to surplus lines, for reasons we all know. And you know, the fact that you have one institution that is sort of has a great program and has made it successful over those years, and really it hasn't spread. USF started a program recently, and now this one with UCF. We should have 10 programs like this in the state. The Florida Association of Insurance Agents has programs with the state, other state colleges. I don't know that it's as robust here, but the idea that we gear towards, you know, bachelor's and master's degree, you know, we'll see how it goes. But I think part of it is how to create the demand. Right. And even at Florida State, I have a recent example of somebody that's been guided into that risk management insurance program. There were no spots available in the finance classes in the College of Business, but there were 43 empty spots in the risk management insurance business or curriculum. So, you know, that's happening even at Florida State with its reputation. We, I think, have an outstanding opportunity for associate degrees in risk management, and, you know, should figure out how to make that a mandatory introduction to risk management and insurance as like a mandatory course if you're going to go into a business curriculum. I don't care if it's finance, accounting, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. But they have to have exposure to that, make it part of that. Temple University does that. Yeah. They have consistently one of the best programs in the country. But there are, and I've worked with them, naming no names, but single moms with a high school education got their insurance license and got into it. And after years of putting it into the business, six-figure incomes, they can take care of their families, they've got a career, they're set. The job opportunities are there, the demand is always going to be there. Yeah. And, I think this is just, we're at the cusp, and maybe it's going to take something like this, but we need to piggyback and not just drive business for this bachelor's program.
Right.
Or a master's program, but figure out how we can create and build out that associate level opportunity for students, because they just don't know. I mean, people would rather have a root canal than talk about insurance.
Right.
And it's like, okay, I get it, but you know what? If you look at it critically, mm-hmm. it could be a career and you could stay, you can go anywhere you want, but you know, it could create jobs and opportunities right here in Daytona Beach.
Yeah. I think some of that's gonna, and as we start talking to you, Chef, I think some of that's gonna come out where, and we already, in the last conversation, and we told them that we could do a concentration in risk management in our own bachelor's of business program. You know, and, you know, but, you know, conversations were already had
right.
in terms of UCF doing that and all that. So, you know, so we're navigating those waters and we'll see where it all lands. But to your point, either way, we can certainly look at, you know, what we can do in that area. Because it's about educating the younger students about it. Because, and I said in the meeting, I said, you know, 18-year-olds don't wake up in the morning and go, I want to major in risk management. They just don't do it, you know, and to... You know, I mean, if you had a dedicated folks in the industry here, get into the business academies at the high school, perhaps, and you start talking about it there, try to get them into a track at, you know, with us or wherever you might have. But it's, like I said, it's got to be, you have to have that deliberate effort because it's not a natural, it's not the top 10 majors students are going to consider. But like I said, it's definitely a good career. You have to figure out how to get to it. But.
Yeah, I just think, to belabor the point even more, but it's like we're a net exporter of talent in the state of Florida. And, you know, we have, you've got Brandon Brown, Assured Partners, Foundation Risk Partners, and Security First. Within the Volusia Flagler, Seminole County, within driving distance, but they're all right here. And so the talent, you know, we have to go elsewhere to get the talent, you know, out of state, and there's just not enough of it being produced in the state. But here we are in Daytona Beach, we have an opportunity that is immense.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is during the recession, I mean, the pandemic and all the efforts by Jimmy Patronis to bring businesses into Florida. They're still located outside. You know, we didn't really create and bring that industry here. And the state of Florida should be a net exporter. Mm-hmm. I mean, importer of you know, that talent. But right now we're just not there. And I think we have a great opportunity.
Yeah. So with that is, you know, again, part of the way in here is, so they have this money for a building. It would be, you know, we're estimating an 83,000 square foot building to be built. It's going to be big. And part of it would be, you know, there's conversation about a parking garage to go with it, because we certainly, now we may have parking during the day, you know, during peak times in the back of campus. So it's not that it's a complete shortage, but, you know, this parking lot at 11:30, I took a video of it, is maybe got 15, 20 spots in this very corner available. So you can see what a footprint like that would do to parking there. So, but I had Alan impose options. I mean, they had something, UCF had something putting it here, and I think, oh no, wait a minute, here. Putting the building here. And my concern, and I think I talked individually about it, is that this location with a building that large doesn't balance well with what we've already have there. Meaning, A, we have a beautiful building on this side, the Husseini Center. It's got has its own kind of Mediterranean type look, and then we did all of this work for this entranceway to give the view of the student center. That building would be, you know, at four stories high, would be taller than the student center.
My concern would be we would lose our identity as Daytona State College if you put that out anywhere near ISB.
Yeah.
A structure that size is going to be a billboard.
Right.
Okay, and it's going to be a billboard for UCF, not for Daytona State College. And unless they would be willing to give a whole, you know, we're the primary building, on the, which I don't believe.
Well, I did say,
yes, right? I said one of the must-haves is going to need to be, it has to be co-branded. If it's going to be that prominent on ISB, it cannot look like Welcome to UCF.
But I agree with you, you got to be really careful.
Yes.
I like the the further away.
So so that's why, you know, this is not their idea, this is, these are our idea, our ideas about where we think it should be. So, you know, if it's a large one, it's tucked back in the corner, that leaves this still for us, you know, and our master plan has a call for a building right here, anyway. But, so that's one idea there, you know, parking garage could go, we could even go on the side here perhaps, or in between. I'm the one that came up with this idea, but I don't like it because, and we have to show this with our facilities committee yet. This is the only way to cut through the back of campus currently. And if you put a parking garage here, now you got to go out to White Street and come out and then come back in to access this part of campus. So that concerns me with that option. So, and the other option is this is the shared building we right now have at UCF. And currently they're only in this building at, I don't know, maybe 20%. We're using all of this building now. This used to be, probably used to be flipped at one time. It was 80-20. Now we're using 80% and they're using 20%. But we could place the building here with a little parking garage in the back. Because we have to be a little mindful parking back here because this is where we have plans for Res Hall 2. So, you know, we couldn't just evaporate all those parking spots and not consider parking. So this is another option, building here with a parking garage right in the back. Thoughts, feedback?
The other road coming in, so if you, on White Street, there's the road in the back you already pointed out.
This one here?
No, the one in the, that one.
Yep.
But then you could also take the other, so come up now towards ISB. What if you took that road out and put the building and the parking together, back to your point, so you could still go across campus? Is that working?
You know, I thought about that. The only thing is, this is heavily used. You know, people in the neighborhoods that live here come to school. This is heavily used. And this throughway here, I mean, we'd have to put some traffic control just because it's a parking lot too. You know, you got cars, and you got and you have a lot of students walking, a lot of pedestrian traffic going this way. Like all of our programs are in here now, Quanta and whatnot. So now you'll see a lot of traffic going this way. So it could be done, but we'd have to give some consideration to the pedestrian.
Yeah, I like the back option, but now you're going to tuck a pretty nice building in the very back, and they might not.
Right.
That's going to be a fun conversation.
You know, it's maybe my own pet peeve, but, you know, where you have it there, tucked back from ISB, I hate having parking lots or that parking that faces the road. Mm-hmm. It's like, you put the parking behind. If you could brand it correctly and co-brand it properly and put it in the corner and flip that, you know, and have the parking on the north side, mm-hmm. You know, it could work, but I agree. If it becomes the marquee for UCF, that's a problem. Yeah. But we also talked about use. If it's co-branded and there are stipulations in the lease about use, you know, that if it drops below a certain percentage, it flips to Daytona State College, might not be a bad long-term plan.
Well, that's something, you know, other thing we need some feedback is, you know, from y'all in terms of what do we want to have in this, you know, we'll have to write up a lease because they'll be on our property, and what do we want in that lease? Is it 30 years or 50 years the building turns over to us?
We then own
all the maintenance that needs to happen with it, but.
What's the estimated, have they shared any expectation of what it's going to cost to build?
$60 million.
$60 million, okay, I missed that.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at what you've presented up there, just from a disruption of flow and creating new habits and all those things, the corner back in the back corner with on White Street is, in my view, the least disruptive. It requires the least amount of changes of the way your traffic flows now. It's close to a building that already is utilized with them. It's just, there's a lot of value, in my opinion, putting it there as opposed to putting it out toward ISB. I would agree with Bob's comment. If it goes out on ISB and we get the branding right, then you might as well take advantage of it and move it out to the front.
Right.
I would agree.
Yeah, and that's where I am. If it can be branded where we feel good about it, then there is opportunity, you know, and that we get some usage out of it, so that people that come to do business with Daytona State go to that building from time to time.
We don't want it to dwarf any current structures,
right?
And then potentially anything that we've got planned in the future with a master plan that would make it look small compared to that building as well.
Right. What I'd like to say, if we are in agreement, is if it's going to be in the front, and again, I could live with it scooted up here. We did address the parking lot issue too, Bob, when we did this entranceway. We built a berm, and there's hedges there, so you're not looking at cars.
Yeah.
For that exact reason, you know, we don't want to show cars. So, but either way, there is branding opportunity. If we're in agreement, is I think this part right here is off limits.
I agree.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think this is just off limits. This is our entrance.
Yeah.
You know, we got the Husseini Center, beautiful building, the Student Center.
That's going to be our building.
Hey, John.
Yes.
We have that land across White Street.
Yep.
Have you ever suggested to put it over there?
We could.
Is it big enough? That's an interesting idea.
Yeah, put it across there.
Alan had the parking garage on the other side, which I said, let's take that out because that's practically doesn't make sense because you know, have to walk across White Street to get to the building, but you know, unless you had a bridge. But I don't know, Alan, would it be large enough? I think it might be large enough for the building, but then what about parking? Unless they built a parking garage underneath the building.
Nuts. We're actually designing a building where the parking garage is in the interior, in the building.
Yeah, but that's
interesting.
So then you have more windows,
yeah,
and you don't see the parking garage at all.
Smart.
Really good idea.
What is it? You think that?
It's possible, and it's a common practice now. Footprints are going to be determined by the height of the building, how many stories it's going to go up. Same with the parking garage. So if it's two levels and it's you know, right, more vast, then it's going to take up more land. But if it's four levels and it goes up, or it's a smaller footprint.
Yeah. So yeah, that's this plot here, which is a decent size, I think, right?
Decent.
Yeah, but it might take the building being five stories or something to get the square footage in.
Yeah.
So it sounds like
they're building it and pay for it.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, how does that?
But I don't know if that's going to be of interest to them. I think there's some, you know, there's some want to have a little bit of the presence thing there with. But again, the ISB is prime real estate, so it's something we've got to really, really, you know, beyond me being here and y'all, this is prime real estate for Daytona State College.
When you look at it, though, that you price the difference of the options, you price that into the lease.
I mean, it looks like it's going to be able to.
You know, so what, there's a component for them that they got to pay us more for that land, I think, versus the other. I mean, so you can kind of structure as those two options.
I don't think they pay for the land, though, do they? I mean, there's a...
Well, that's another question. Do we charge them a lease?
It's ground lease, right?
Yeah.
So...
But right now, they pay us, because we own these buildings. So there is an annual agreement we sign, and they pay us rent.
I think that's an absolute must. And I feel strongly about the reversion provisions in there.
Well, if it's a ground lease, it has to revert to us.
Absolutely, and it's they're both state institutions, so it's a wrangling that'll happen in Tallahassee and in their legal departments. But when you look at it, the opportunity, again, we're betting on this. We should be looking at this as an opportunity for not only their program, but the accentuation of Daytona State College's programs. And if it's successful, we'll get the rent. We won't care. I mean, it'll be a home run. If it's not, have a reversion provision that we get it.
Yeah.
And if we get it, we can build out programs that fit the needs here and whatever. And it's like, if they're going to put $60 million into infrastructure that could be for the long-term benefit of Daytona State College.
Any estimate of maintenance costs along the way? I mean, obviously the first couple of years are different than than 20 years down the road, but I think that would be one of the things you need to be thinking about to go with it, because if they change their direction to Bob's point about reversing and all of that, we need an 83,000 square foot building. You don't just walk in and walk out.
Yeah,
there's a lot going on there that you're going to have to maintain. So I would be curious to know an estimated today's dollars.
Yeah.
Cost to maintain it.
Alan, we used to get, so the state used to give us, every new building we built, they used to add maintenance money into our budget for.
Mm-hmm.
They stopped that a few years ago, and now we are required to put, and I think this might be the case with UCF, so we're now required with new buildings to put in
0.5%
of the building in a reserve
per year.
Do we know if UCF is subject? Was that all? UCF's going to have to. So in that lease agreement, there perhaps it could be, in the event it reverts, the maintenance money comes with it,
but
because it's tied to the building. Right?
There was a big study, I forget how many years ago, with is it APA? Is that the organization that does facilities? APA and Nakubo, and they suggested the true long-term capital repair and replacement cost for a building was 3-5% annually. That you would put in a reserve, and that would cover the new roof, the new HVAC, the sprucing up of the carpet, the minor.
5%?
3-5%
annually.
And that's why they were saying so many public institutions of higher ed have such huge deferred maintenance, because they weren't setting aside enough.
Yeah, and that makes sense, because what I've looked at from a condominium, for example, that was what our engineer, Drew Isaac, always recommended, was a 3% number with inflation adjustments each year, too.
Yeah.
So you'd have that, but let's say for insurance purposes, too, that's still on the state. The UCF's got to carry the insurance for that. Doesn't go on the property schedule for Daytona State College, because mm-hmm. It's a different program, insurance program.
I would think so. If they own the building, yeah.
Right, and so again, it's just what it can't be is the kind of situation you have over here, where they're at 20% utilization. And then you're stuck with it, and there's no, you can't do anything with it. You can't get your hands around it. You can't utilize it. And it's like, if there was a reversion provision and we, tighten it up, and let's just say you're going to see it over a period of years. You're going to have a heads up. It's not, and I agree with you, it's not all of a sudden, here it is, here are the keys. You're going to notice, though, over a period of years, what the utilization is. And if it is in trouble, it's not going to be a surprise. It's going to happen over a period of years. So you have a little bit of run rate and time to plan, or the future Board of Trustees will have time to react and plan to it. But
Well, I assume you can have provisions in the lease that they have to maintain it to the standards of the campus.
Exactly.
And so you could, which would give you something to at least push on them if they started to.
Well, 83,000 square feet is, to me, the biggest concern, because that's a lot of space to occupy.
What was the original?
And they have to have a really big, what's that?
The original was like, at one point, it was like 120,000 square feet. I mean, it was like the.
Overly ambitious.
Yeah, I mean, it's.
But it would size, that's about the size of the building I'm in.
Yeah.
Which is a big building.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's something else for them to think about too. And I know it's kind of maybe that this is all, you know, horses running down the road already. But since they have this other building and, you know, they've got a utilization issue, would there be overflow if they did moderate their plans a little bit?
What do you mean overflow? Like if,
could they use the other existing UCF?
I mean, yeah, there's spaces not being used. You know, we've moved some more departments in there, you know, so there is space there.
What year is this?
That building is ours. It is a building. We're leasing it to
the
town. Okay. Yeah, that's our building. So they would have to, you know, if they wanted to use more classrooms and we had it available, we could, and we'd alter the lease to give them more classrooms.
Right.
I still say put them across the street.
What's that?
I still say put them across the street.
It sounds like, and it's great dialogue, but it sounds like we all agreed that corner by the entrance is off limits. That's the hard.
Yeah.
And then you need to sit down with them and maybe come back. You've got the back across the street and the front.
Yeah.
Which probably all depend on branding and lease structure. And yeah.
Cemeteries are off limits.
I think stuff like you know what.
You guys bet how long it would take Bob to bring that up.
There was a wager.
I think stuff like 83,000 square feet. What's the plan? How long does it take to get to 100% occupancy of the space?
The one thing they're talking about is moving, when I was talking to Dr. Cartwright, is they have a solar research park in Cocoa. And I think they're leasing that, I think. And they're thinking about just up and moving it here. So I think they're looking to do something like that so that they'll get the occupancy just by moving versus building enrollment. Because I think they realized, you know, that's how you're going to fill it. And I think, and bringing, so they'd bring solar research, you know, professors and whatever that you do in those kind of facilities. And
I think as long as, I mean, look, if we're going to do it, that might, you just need to know the plan.
Yeah.
You know, like, or, you know, we don't want to inherit a museum.
Yeah, yeah. So.
And you know, the 3-1 they talked about might work, but that doesn't really benefit us that much. The one that benefits us the most is the 2-2 here.
Yeah.
So if we're negotiating with them, maybe we can get some incentives for us, like a guaranteed number of internships or some type of, some scholarship, whatever it might be that we think helps benefit the 2 years.
Rodney, you got these ideas now?
Okay. Well, yeah, because you're looking at it too, in terms of what they put in there, looking 50 years out or 30 years out. Halfway out there, how much is going to be used by office space, which basically this is, versus technology is teaching?
What's their timeline? Like, they got $20 million, is UCF going to fund the other 40?
No,
are we waiting to go back?
They're going back to the legislature.
Oh, so this could be a couple years till we've been
around. Yeah. But I was talking to Bill Christie the other day because he's on their board, and he came to this meeting with Alan Flores a week ago, brainstorm about things to do, and then I saw Bill over the weekend at the art festival, and I said, yeah, we just need to, you know, we were talking, I said, yeah, figure out a location, and he goes, we already have a building designed already ready to go, like something that you take off the shelf. Concerns me a little bit because I think you would want to take time to design this. If it's going to be an ISP, that it would be, I didn't say anything, but in back on, like, we're being very careful about how, what our look is off of ISP. I don't know what this off-the-shelf building, does it, you know, if it looks like my building, so, you know, it's an administrative building, it's not, nothing to speak of, you know, when you have an opportunity to put something, you know, you got the Husseini building, you've got, you know, it's got nice character to it, and the student center, and, you know, I don't want to put a brick building with, you know, at least look, I don't know what it looks like, but anyhow. But yeah, I mean, it's, so they only have the 20 million.
But they're going to try to get it fully funded from the legislature.
That's my understanding, yeah.
So even if it was 2020, they're not going to be fully funded for another 2 years?
Well, I think they're going to try. I mean, there's chances when that happens. So it's like, okay, your foot's in the door, and then you get the rest the next year. So I think
maybe in 2040.
Yeah, yeah, they might get the 40 next year. But yeah, the part. So I think I'm clear on the location, you know, and what if they want to nudge it up front, it's what some of the must-haves there, and we'll show them the other background. Because I mean, Dr. Cartwright said to me, because I don't really care where it goes. But I think what he might not care, but yeah. There's other players in this scenario here that
I guarantee you somebody cares a lot.
I think somebody cares a lot. So you know how that. You know, welcome to my world, but you know how that goes. So, we'll have to figure out where you know where how strong that is, and if it's going to be in the front, then what our must-haves are.
That's what I say. That does give us leverage then for
right.
For
what helps us. Lease structure.
Exactly right.
Yeah. And then so the lease structure that's the part that you know we're talking about a possible reversion, and then maybe reversion with language on. That the reserve comes with it, the maintenance reserve, because those maintenance reserves are, if I'm not mistaken, they're tied to buildings now, right?
Tied to the building construction.
So, I would think that would be a reasonable ask. I'm looking around the room.
Especially absolutely, yes.
Yeah. The longer it goes, the more important it is.
Yeah. That, for sure.
This is sort of, you know, again, you can look at it like, ooh, you know, what are they getting? But it's also, what are they giving? And maybe this is, again, that prime opportunity, and I'll get off my soapbox, but it's like a 2-2 program, or we build that out so that we are betting on them succeeding, but their provision is in there, like we're in this too. To help this succeed for the benefit of Daytona State College and associate grads and also these bachelor and master's programs. And so if it's a booming success, this is a home run.
Yeah.
This could be an absolute home run. Mm-hmm. And
I mean, 2+2 is going to, will prevail, whether it's, I mean, I think we need to try to get it out of the gate as well. But, you know, just, again, the players that are involved, there was the desire to have a standalone baccalaureate degree.
But you know,
UCF here, like as a freshman, you graduate from high school and you show up to the UCF Daytona,
right?
And you're entering in a bachelor's degree. Now, I think that conversation has started to change a little bit. Just it's a reality thing.
You can have
it's just a reality thing. You know,
you can do it.
You could want it. We can try it, but it, you know. Yeah, so.
You can have dual admission where we get the first two, even if it's they're admitted to
correct.
They're admitted to Daytona State and USC, and we get the first 2 years.
We talked about that. So the conversation has evolved to that, but that was not where it was. That's not where it started. I think I've shared a little bit of that with you. Like when we started hearing about this, I even called Dr. Cartwright. I said, "I'm hearing you guys want to start you want to teach freshman English here," and he's like. Well, I don't, but, you know, so.
And we already teach freshman English.
And we already have it. You know, So I think we get there. Okay.
Well, one other thing. Is it feasible, those folks, to meet with our board, sit down? You know, it's going to be a given that they're going to be putting a building somewhere up here. But to eyeball with them.
When you say with them, with who's them? Their board? for...
No. Folks that are trying to put it together.
Yeah.
Because like you said, that, you know, the president may just said, I just, you know, and then there's other little screws down there that say they want this one,
yeah,
that one. I don't know, I'm just saying.
I don't know if I would do the whole, if we do the whole board, it's got to be a meeting. It's got to be a called meeting. I don't know if I would do that. I think if someone wants to be a rep for the board with me, you know, and I could, yeah. We certainly
could. Oh boy.
I think that's the way to probably best handle it. And I certainly will, you know, this is where I take your stance on your behalf and say, here's the board's feeling on, positive for, excited, mm-hmm. great opportunities, and here's some things that, we want to see happen with it.
Well, this is really some options that you presented to us, not information that they've asked for site locations. We're just getting ahead of this a bit. Is that correct?
I am, because I've seen, what they were thinking. And that's when I got with Randy and others to say, because that's when this, the building was going to be like 120,000 square feet.
Yeah.
And so anyway, so what I saw was a location, right? I saw the location right there.
Albatross right in front. I think you have a lot of information for the next meeting.
Right
there.
You
got the absolute no.
Yeah.
You've got the strong desire for the 2-2.
Yeah.
And co-branding's important. Reversion's important. Mm-hmm. The maintenance reserve and,
Yep.
I think it comes down to this structure, right? Nobody objects, right? The structure, right? I think it's yeah.
Yep. It could be a win-win.
Yes.
I do truly think that if, as long as we're, as long as we are at the table and not being told this is what's going to happen,
mm-hmm.
If we, as long as we're at the table, and we are, that we can have some input and our must-haves are in there, then it could be a good opportunity. And for the community, mm-hmm. I mean, they're going to bring solar researchers here. That's going to bring, some of these people are going to relocate and have to, buy houses here and,
The only thing about it is we can't really control what ends up there. That's going to be up to them. I'm more concerned about it just being occupied and not becoming a liability to us. But they can say solar research, but it could change too, depending upon what's going on in the world. So I as long as it's just busy, it's occupied, and it doesn't become
especially. If it's going to be in the front, I mean, you don't want it to be an empty hotel, it'll look awful.
There's your res hall too.
Stuck it out with some extra plumbing.
Yeah.
good. All right. Perfect. Good conversation. So, second thing.
Way to go.
In the new. Lots of stuff. So this, if you recall, came to us last year in the form of the desire for us to be the entity providing the charter. The board had requested that they work with the school district instead. I know they have had a meeting there. I don't know that we're all aware that the board they've tried twice and it hasn't worked. And so I did talk to the superintendent to, see if there was interest, and, she's not opposed to it, but they have their own things to deal with on that side. So they have come to us saying that statute changed a year ago where the FTE now follows the student. And I can't remember how much it is, $700-$800, I think. So if, your kids wanted to, go to I guess even like for Father Lopez, if those that have had kids go to Father Lopez, my understanding is that the state would write a check for take $700-$800 off the bill. So they want to do that, build a private school built on the premise that they'll go out and get a bunch of students and they'll collect $700-$800, from the state per head. So I think that does alleviate, the biggest concern we had last year in being the one granting charters, because you, as Randy had experience, you grant one and then your last institution within 5 years you had 40. So, and it becomes its own, you know.
It's a political nightmare.
Yeah, just administratively and everything, it's just, it's, you know, we are not in the K-12 business, per se. I mean, we do a little bit of, I guess, adult education, but. So just to recap, it'd be on the New Smyrna Beach Edgewater campus, 6 through 12, 30 acres. Now, I think they might need more over time. Because if it's going to be, especially if it's not going to be part of the school system, I don't see any collaboration with kids going. If it was a charter school as part of the school district, I could see the kids that went there could compete in sports and participate in activities across the street in Smyrna Beach High School. I don't think that happens in this scenario, so I've mentioned that to them. They're like, yeah, we probably would need some more for, you know, they would probably want to eventually have their own soccer teams and other, they're going to be a school. So think of whatever Father Lopez has on that side of the activity equation they want. It still would be a, you know, kind of a technical high school where they, you know, they would be building a couple labs. One would be, I think, the original plan was welding and machining. I don't know, we've already put machining in our one building there, so I don't know what else they would do. And part of the agreement is that we would do, they would do dual enrollment during the day, and they would pay all the expense for that dual enrollment, and that we would have access to those labs in the evening so that we, at no charge, that we could run an evening tuition charging programs at night in machining and welding. Was kind of the, and then they had that 50, they have to lease, the lease was like $50,000. Do you have that?
Yeah, I was just going to ask you.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Just a copy of the lease, you don't need to look at it, but I, you know, since we have a couple of attorneys around the table, some nighttime reading, right, you know, that. But I think if there's anything you see, yeah. The one thing in there that we want to change, I think it says K-12, and I think it had to be when it was a charter school, but now that it's private, I think we want to strike out the K and put the 6 instead. That might be a must-have on our side, I would recommend. It's thick, but there's really only a few pages that are, you know, the operational stuff, and then the rest is the legalese stuff. But
what would market rent be on a ground? I mean, I know so, just out of curiosity, ballpark.
So we came up with 50,000 last time, and I think that was done on some kind of calculation for.
That'd be based on square feet.
30 acres.
Yeah. I think it was 50,000 a year, but I did, that was calculated 4 years ago, or 5 years ago, so we need to recalculate, so at minimum we have to recalculate that. But the way it was going to work, they were really not going to stroke us a check, because the way the agreement says, as long as you spent at least 50,000 in the cost to run dual enrollment in your facility, meaning they'd have to hire the faculty member, and you're talking welding, supplies, they would blow it out of the water. So it was like, it was their case for some reason they didn't do it, we would have that lease payment.
So I just throw this out. My concern is, with several concerns. One is that our core business, if you will, is, you know, after 12th grade, I mean, obviously there's dual enrollment, I get that, but our focus is on after the 12th grade. And we have each year we continue to improve statistically in against our competition across the state and across the country in certain areas. In order to, and the reason that we've been successful in all that is we've got great people doing great work, take it responsibly, do their job, and beyond. This, I mean, are we ready to commit the resources to, because you would have to make sure that this was successful, to be consistent with everything else that we're accomplishing? And that's a big concern of mine, because the moment, if we're if we're enabling this to exist, that these people are going to run their own deal, and they don't run it at the same way we do business here, that's a black eye, could be a black eye to everything else that we're doing. And so I don't get the feeling that we have the control, 100% of the control that we need. But yeah. Maybe I'm wrong.
No, I think that the main thing is we are, so some of the benefits, we're not going to be involved in, other than whatever dual enrollment they would like us to provide in the school. So this is part of the good thing, is that we are not running the school. We're just going to run, we're going to pop dual enrollment, just kind of like we do, you know, if we offer a class at a high school or whatever. The upside is, though, that, you know, that is our smallest campus. There is that group down there that really wants more training with, you know, Sarah and Massey and all those folks down there that want more vocational type training done for the workforce. So embedding, you know, if this is becomes a school of 800 students, you're putting 800 students right in the same, across the parking lot from our buildings, and you will get dual enrollment. You know, we're not going to teach English and math and all the other classes in their building, so they come walk across the parking lot, and then we get the $88 an FTE per FTE payment. So it could give us a boost in dual enrollment that we don't have really now at that campus.
So how does it work for the ones that are in there? So you're saying they would keep track of their costs, and if that's greater than $50,000, we wouldn't get anything. Do we get anything? So a student enrolls for a dual enrollment course in welding. They teach it, they this private school, in their lab.
They hire our professor.
So their costs would just be the materials or that?
Right. Materials and cost of instruction. They cover everything it costs to run it on their property.
So they pay the faculty member, even though they're not faculty?
Yeah. So we won't collect any tuition, because when you do dual enrollment at a school, you can't charge a tuition. But you can charge them the total cost of instruction, which we will. But we will get the FTE value that is part of our funding formula. All of a sudden, you know, our FTE will go from, say, 50 FTE in welding to 75. So when the reports come out, the Toronto State is teaching 75 FTE in welding, and if we have 50 in machining, it would be 75 in machining. So we will get that bump in the formula of what we're producing, and then, you know, this is what they had laid out. So this is our master plan, so they don't impede on these buildings, and this here is where this is the campus they would build, and you know, again, so the thought is, you know, when if a kid wants to dual enroll in junior and senior year and take, or whatever they want, take English, math, philosophy, history, they walk across the street and, or, you know, a little path or whatever we would create, you know, and they get to, you know, and once they go in our building, the rule is the school has to pay us, so this school would have to pay us the, whatever it is, 80-something dollars credit hour for that kid to come across the street and take class. So there's a business opportunity there.
And I think it's important to mention that support, or lack thereof, that at New Smyrna Beach High School right now.
Right. So New Smyrna Beach High School is literally right here. And we started a machining program that sits in this building here. And it ran for a year or two, and then it's now empty. That lab is empty. We just can't get, I have a hard time to believe a school that big can't, and I would run it with as little as 12, even though I don't like to, because we don't, you know, probably lose a little bit of money. but out of goodwill, I would probably run it. But you can't get 18 to 20 students to walk across the street and take a dual enrollment machining program.
I've gone to a couple of those meetings that are down in that southeast Volusia, and then the school system is there as well. And they, the culture is more of the one of competition with us than it is cooperation. Mm. That's what exists. And if you've got that size school and you don't have anybody in there, it tells you that they're definitely not actively trying to promote this.
Yeah.
And they're probably trying to promote an alternative source at some point when they get ready. And I've listened to all this hyperbole about what they're going to do.
Yeah.
And we're ready to do. So that's a tough one.
Yeah. So we haven't had a lot of luck getting students to come across the street.
The same thing here, mainly coming across the street. Yeah.
And again, the new principal came to Mainland. All of a sudden, Mainland, believe it or not, was one of the smallest schools. When I say smallest, had the lowest enrollment in dual enrollment here. We had more students from Deltona that didn't have a campus right in their backyard than Mainland. New principal comes in, different perspective. We're filling an entire welding lab with Mainland students. So we have those dynamics and the different visions of different principals, and their prerogative to do what they want to do. But when we have a part of the community knocking on our door and say, "Hey, we've got this, we want to train students in this area, we're not getting it, and we have a plan. Are you interested in being involved?" Now our involvement again is really we're really a landlord at the basic level with a dual enrollment agreement. Is really what we are in this scenario, and we are giving up at least 30 acres of our land down there.
What happens if that school fails? The state comes and says, "We got to shut this down because we're not doing the right things." What happens then?
So it's a private school, so the state wouldn't really shut them down, but if they just financially couldn't make it, then the person that would be they're doing the financing and all that too, is that there was another way to get a charter. I'd have that application ready to go. And it wasn't because they didn't think they were gonna make, it was, I said, this legislature said FTE follows a student. Next legislator says, no, we aren't sending public money to private schools, and they stop it. What do you do? And then he said he would. There's another way to get a charter, where you do it directly to the state. You don't have to go through the school district. And I have those papers ready to go, if that was to happen. But there is this risk for some reason if it doesn't go through. What happens, and then that's where I think in the original lease it did have. I think we had the opportunity to get the buildings or something like that. Yeah. Although it's going to be financed, so we would have to take on the debt. Probably.
You assume they'd have to have something down on it, so yeah, who knows?
That's a good question.
I should know this. What's our normal tuition for credit hour? Not dual enrollment. So somebody should.
For the associate degree with required fees, it comes out to like $102 a credit hour.
So the 80 something's not too far.
To me, it's like you have the voluntary participation of high schools presently under this. I hate to say it, but it's kind of force feeding. Seems to me that that's an opportunity versus depending on the moods and leadership that you have at the high schools and. You're pretty tied up if you're running this school to make sure that this works.
The only thing I might wonder is there a way to get a little bit of land lease, ground lease payment, regardless of if they spend? Land's pretty valuable.
Yeah.
And there is a little bit of risk, like if they go belly up, they can't get the charter. there's debt on the buildings, and now who gets this, who moves in right next door to this?
Right.
I think I'm with you on that, because I've had the same thoughts that, you know, this is not a public charter school where, you know,
private company.
It's a private, right, so. So lease payment above and beyond the, direct costs. So, you know, this is one that, I need a little direction, guidance on, you know.
To me, it's kind of like the other one. If the terms are set up right, there's some win-win possibilities. It supports the community. You're right, we're going to get some of the students. They're right next door to us now. Some of those kids are going to say, I want to get an associate's degree while I'm in high school.
Yeah. So I look at it from that business perspective. That there, it will give a, it should drive some business into the other two buildings there, and maybe help the campus grow. I mean, maybe we could add something else down the road, down there.
And that's I think the key, because like I said, I think that point that you made about the support that or lack thereof from NSB High. They're not sending students across the street and haven't, you know, for years. What's the future for that, for growth? You know, what are we going to do there? You know, what's the plan? And it's like, if you can't penetrate that market now, you know, is there a plan for growth? You know, what other things are available? This one's kind of bird in the hand, and it looks like it's a viable, at least, you know, It's got some viability, and with the right protections, I agree with Randy. I think it's something that you make sure you're protected in the lease. But hey, it's an opportunity to grow that campus and get some activity there. Because I'd hate for that campus to continue to suffer just because there's no plan. There's no other, you know, there's no participation. There's no growth. You know. We should not have, you know, let's get something, and if it creates some momentum, it is that opportunity. It's a springboard, I think, to do.
Yeah, because I think this the some of the issue with New Smyrna Beach campus is it's not so far away that the traditional age students that come to us just want to come here.
Right.
And now the south part of that Oak Hill area is growing and whatnot, so that becomes a little bit further of a, you know. But, you know, you get into how many programs can we duplicate, right, with making it cost effective. So, you know, we were going to pop up, you know, possibly welding in an AP lab, and I think those would fill. But, you know, in terms of big populations, those are 50 kids total with those two programs, right? 100 when, you know, with full enrollment, you know. So you're not talking huge growth opportunity with even us just adding, dropping a few programs there, you know, down the road. I mean, it is our anchor to the Space Coast, and so I think about that too, you know, for our county. That is our, this is our furthest south location, and how do we position ourselves to be producing the talent that attracts businesses possibly into that Oak Hill area.
You know, I think, and again, this is an aside, but again, from a growth strategy for this campus, we had a presentation, and it's been a couple of years, and I'm out of touch with the Miami Corp property that they're developing south of Oak Hill. Gosh, I went out there for like a groundbreaking sort of, you know.
Yeah, big project.
It's huge. Yeah. It's enormous. Right. And Rodney and I have actually talked about it from, you know, the demand for the commuter traffic and the size of that community, what they're proposing, you know, everything. And it's basically going to feed this Space Coast, it's going to speed that industry. And so opportunities for Embry-Riddle. There are definite opportunities for Daytona State College in that. And that is, I mean, it's massive. And when you talk about community and what's happening just with Volusia, it'll be the largest community in Volusia County. Yeah. And it'll be on the south border. It'll be bordering Brevard.
I do remember that.
And so, you know, you think about something that's bigger than Deltona.
Yeah.
And it's going to happen, and all of a sudden it's like, whoa, what happened to the polarity shift? And it's not going southwest to through Orlando and Seminole County and Orange County. Exactly. It's going to be going south on 95. Yeah. And so there are people that are going to be living in those communities, and there are going to be needs and demand in that community that are not going to come up here to this campus.
Right, right.
It's too far a reach.
It is, yeah. It becomes, it's like the issue we have with Palm Coast.
That's right.
It's, yeah. Just, it's just too far to, you know, I mean, we get some, but it's far.
That's it. So anyway, I it might be worthwhile to have a presentation, maybe Glenn Storch or somebody who's been, you know, is plugged in on that, yeah, just to say,
yeah, see where it's at.
What's happening, where, what are the projections, and again, that goes way beyond this, but if you start to look at future growth opportunities for this campus, that's going to be a big one.
Yeah, yeah. And that's why we got to make sure we are giving up land too.
Right.
But do we have enough to still grow a little bit when that demand starts to percolate? And I think we do. We can still plop up, you know, a few buildings. Okay. So consensus is to let them know we are willing to discuss it and we can put in ideas in paper.
Yeah, for the attorneys in the crowd, it would be great to know what are the strategies for protecting the event of the lease going bad.
Right.
I mean, the school going bad. Like,
right.
can we carve out where we get the parking lot? Can we jack up the rent? Can we?
Right.
I don't know what we can or can't do, but anything you guys can think of that we could put in there that would actually be enforceable, allowed, whatever the right word is, that would be it.
Okay.
You don't want somebody come in and putting something in there that's totally unrelated.
Oh, agreed.
Yeah. And so that's just a rendering. Yeah. Okay, so we are now at the board open discussion point. Did you want to take a 2-minute break?
Yes.
Rest of the break, and then we'll get done with the break.